Who starts the meeting?
You can start the meeting.
Okay. So I'm never All right. Good afternoon, everyone. Today is Tuesday, September 16th. It's 1:34 p.m. I'd like to call this meeting of the Budget Advisory Committee to order. May we have the roll call, please?
Who's
Here.
Member Kelly.
Here.
Member Oaks.
Here.
Member Cottell.
Here.
Okay. So public comments. Members of the public who wish to comment that are not on today's agenda. Do we have any online?
Yeah, forms? We did not receive any common cards.
No. Okay. And there's no one here. Okay. Public comment is closed. You can now turn to. Agenda approval of the May 8th, 2025 regular meeting action minutes.
I'll make the motion to approve.
I'll second.
I wasn't here, so.
You can still, you've read them and you can
still. I can still vote so we can vote on them. Yeah. Okay, should we have a.
A roll call.
Sorry. Yeah.
Member Feldman?
Aye.
Member Oxford?
Aye.
Member Oaks?
Aye.
Member Cottell?
Aye.
Okay. Minute approved. So we have two action items. And so let's go to the first one, election of Budget Advisory Committee Chair and Vice Chair.
We nominate Sam.
You don't want to do it anymore?
No.
Okay.
I'm getting off, partway off the horse here.
Yeah, I happily do it.
Good.
Vice chair.
What do you want?
I don't have a preference.
I don't have a preference. But
do we need to?
You can do both at one time, but it needs to be here.
Okay.
Main.
Okay. Oh, okay.
I'll agree to do it.
Okay.
To be the vice chair.
Do you want to nominate us?
All right. So I nominate Sam Feldman as chair and Fran Cottell as vice chair.
I second it.
Either way. I'll let Navar.
Okay. I'll second.
I'm too humble to second the motion.
You're all motion.
All right.
Okay. So we have a motion to vote on the chair and vice chair. Let's call a roll call, please.
Oh.
All right. We need to do that, right?
Yes.
We need to do a roll first, didn't it?
Yes. Roll call.
Okay, that's a roll call. Member Feldman?
Aye.
Member Whisper?
Aye.
Member Oaks?
Aye.
Member Tell?
Aye.
All right.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're now the chair.
It's a whole new regime. Here.
Immediately.
Regime. Am I the chair immediately?
Immediately.
Yes, right.
Immediately.
All right. Well, then let's go to action item 5.2, discussion of research revenue measures. And you want to start with the presentation?
Yes. Thank you. Chair Feldman, Sharon Fredrickson, finance director. I have with me Ian Mora and GS that you're familiar with. We also are fortunate that we have Jasmine Baines and Eric Myers from HBL companies who will be able to answer detailed questions about the business license. And we have Sarah Mars from NBS who can handle questions related to parcel tax. With that, I'm going to bring up a presentation and I'm going to sort of jump between two presentations. The start of the first one, then we'll go into the business license since HDL is with us for a little bit less time, and then we'll jump back to the other options. So I appreciate your patience with the logistics today. Like in dual on the screen and here on my PowerPoint. So again, our item today is to discuss researching the revenue measures. What we'll discuss today is a little bit of the context, the background of why we're here. We'll then look at several revenue options in detail, business license, parcel tax, sales tax, transient occupancy tax, and utility user tax. We'll then proceed with discussion and recommendations from this committee. Again, the purpose is to provide recommendations to the Budget Governance Committee and then Council related to these revenue options. In terms of background, City Council held a strategic planning workshop in the spring, and two items emerged. The first was to look at revenue in terms of audit, budget, make sure we're doing our due diligence in collecting the revenue sources that we currently receive. And second, to research potential new revenue measures related to a potential ballot initiative in November 2026. Of course, at the same time as the strategic plan workshop and priority setting was occurring, the city was also engaged in discussion on its biannual budget for fiscal year 25 through 27. So you have the strategic plan aligning with the budget process and the general fund forecast, which projected a structural deficit. We've updated the numbers slightly based on our adopted 25-26 budget, but you can see their expenses outpacing revenues, resulting in a net deficit before engaging any transfers in the magnitude of $8 to $13 million. As this committee is aware, as part of the discussion on the biannual budget, the Budget Advisory Committee made several recommendations in May of this year, including looking at several of these options that we're going to look at today. And you'll notice that the presentation is structured in line with those priorities, business license, parcel tax, the sales tax, the TOT, and the utility user tax. Okay, so our first option is the business license tax. As the committee is aware, currently business license is assessed at $1 per 1,000 gross receipts. For fiscal year 25-26, we have budgeted $6.6 million in the general fund. You can see there our projection. It's business license was a high of about $7.7 million in 22-23, and it's been pretty flat the next several years, hence why we're going to spend some time today looking at HDL business license and some of their rate modeling that could increase the business license tax upwards to $7.5 million to $13.3 million. That ends up. We're going to now spend some time with our business license tax, and then when we're done with the business license, I ask the committee maybe to for any technical questions they might have, and then we'll jump back to the consideration of the other options, just again to utilize HDLs before they have to leave the meeting. Again, five components of the business license tax outlined in the slide there. I think pretty straightforward. And before we look at where the city may potentially go with a business license restructuring, we wanted to spend a little bit of time on where the city is right now. Again, similar to the pie chart or the trend line you saw on the previous slide, here is the status of the city business license tax revenue. Again, showing that sort of downward decline over the last several years. Where's the city now? Our business counts, even though that revenue line is declining, our business count is fairly resilient, which is good. You can see there the purple being the businesses that are outside the city boundary, but still do business with the city. And then the green or teal color is the businesses inside the city boundary. And again, this is data taken from HDL's database. As the committee may be aware, HDL does administer the business license tax for the city. So we have a very collaborative partnership with HDL, and they're very knowledgeable about the data. And of course,
can I ask a question?
Yes, not? I was going to say if there's questions on a slide, please just ask them then. Move on.
I think this is quick. Just so I understand, outside businesses, something like maybe Amazon, I don't know if they have a facility in Emeryville or not.
Well, it would also be typically a contractor, for example, doing work in Emeryville would be an outside business.
And so they get a sales tax license or business tax license through Emeryville because they're doing work here.
Exactly.
Correct. Or Best Buy, is Best Buy purple or teal?
Teal.
No, they're in Oakland.
Well, they pay some of their tax to Emeryville.
They pay some of their tax.
Right.
But I think that goes through a revenue sharing agreement. They don't have a license with us, right?
Yes.
They send it to Oakland, Oakland sends it to us.
Yeah. And for example, HDL, they're not located in Emeryville, but they do work for us.
Right.
They're paying business license.
It's deal.
Oh, let's keep them on for a couple hours. Is that even out? I don't think it does. All right.
I have a question. Yes, the number of businesses went up, but the revenue went down by $1 million.
Gross receipts. So again, gross receipts. We may have more businesses, but the amount of revenue, the amount of business that they're doing, their taxable dollars is less.
Okay.
That's a good point of clarification.
Okay.
Again, as we talked about, currently in Emeryville, taxes are levied at $1 per 1,000 gross receipts. There's currently 56 business classifications. Talk about possibly reducing the classifications as part of our modeling. And again, businesses also pay processing fee, state fees, and other applicable fees, but that's part of our master fee study and cost recovery, not part of the tax based on gross receipt.
Can I ask a question? HDL do the taxes for a lot of cities, and then do like anonymous analytics, and then they make their advice based on that?
Yes.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay.
Where's the city now? Looking at the business count, and you just break it down by categories so you can get a little bit of the flavor of those businesses and, again, the type of tax that they're paying. And, again, you'll notice a couple of those, as pointed out by our Chair Feldman, the Oakland businesses that share that cross-boundary.
Somebody has rental property here. Are they paying parcel tax and a receipts tax, a gross receipts tax?
Well, they pay their property tax, but the city doesn't have parcel tax per se. That's the biggest test.
Did you mean like a business license for having a rental?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I think they're required to have a business license.
They're required to have a business license.
At least commercial or also residential?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Both. Correct.
And can I,
thank you, Chair Hooks.
I don't want to slow down too much. There are 56 types of business license classifications. Most are just $1 per 1,000, right?
Most of the categories don't even have a business set up at this point.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. And I think that when you get into the detailed report, the HDL folks can talk about this as well. Part of their recommendations is to reduce the number of categories, and in particular, obviously, get rid of the ones where you have no business.
I have like interest or academic questions, but it doesn't matter. So like, why do we have, who set those up? If we're not,
well, I think one of the things to know is that, and I think we were talking about this with Peggy before the meeting, is that in the beginning, when you set up business license ordinances, they were under the control of the council.
Right.
Years later, they became subject to voter approval. And so what happened is when that voter approval came in, many cities, including Emeryville, didn't change their ordinance
after that.
But prior to that, the tradition used to be every time there was a new business, you'd add a category.
Ooh, yeah, yeah.
And what happens is that makes the current ordinance kind of unwieldy because some of the categories you have, you know, like undertakers and circuses and cabarets and stuff, really you don't have much, any of that at all. It doesn't really fit in today's world. But because that was set up so many years ago, it was probably state of the art in the 1980s, but not so much today.
Okay, thank you.
I knew I could get you started on this.
Okay, and then this chart depicts those business types by category. Again, if you look at the pie chart or the donut, I'm starting from 12 o'clock and working clockwise. You see the commercial rental property, 18%, research and development, 12%, healthcare, manufacturing, maybe production. And then coming all the way around, general retail sales, only 5% in terms of business license. A little different when we get to our discussion on sales tax. And to that point, we're talking about all other types, 121 this 25%. So also important to note that the top 100 businesses account for 75%. City's business activity. They also account for 73% of the total tax collected. Okay. Part of the task of HDL was to really look at some comparisons with other jurisdictions and how some of the other cities administer their business tax. We're going to take a look at that. I believe this was a request and recommendation by the Budget Advisory Committee as well. Working with HDL and with our city team, we came up with a handful of cities to look at, Berkeley and Oakland, because they are our neighbors, as well as some cities that have similar business composition, some of the cities that focus on life science or research and development, as well as Walnut Creek, which has a strong retail component. So again, wanting to see how the city currently compares to those cities, how our modeling would stack Emeryville compared to the other cities, knowing that potentially we want to strike a balance between looking at potential revenue enhancement, as well as staying competitive and being a business-friendly environment as well. So again, some data there related to the business count, the revenue. We took that revenue and divided it by the population for a per capita statistic. Also important to note, the last date the ordinance was modified, you can see Union City's on the list, as well as South San Francisco and Redwood City pretty recently updated their ordinance. Most of the jurisdictions use gross receipts, like Emeryville, a few use per employee count, and then we noted whether or not the city had a cap in place.
We're pretty unique. We're small, much smaller, and we're the only one that has gross receipts and a cap.
Correct, at least from this list.
Just if the ordinance last modified is whatever date is there meant it passed, right? So 2024, that
again, if it was back in 84, it was before the voter approval was needed.
But I guess I'm looking at those 2022s and 2024s.
That's correct.
Those are the voters. Yeah. Thanks. Good to know.
Is there a correlation as to which does better, gross receipts or employee?
Well, gross receipts tends to bring in more money. And the other thing that is a value of gross receipts is because it's related to revenues, it has sort of an annual escalator built in. If you have a system with per employee, it tends to be rather flat. Your revenue doesn't move. Although there are cities like San Carlos, for example, where they kind of have a little of both. They have a per employee system and they have a 3% per year escalator to try to mimic a little bit of the gross receipts effect.
Thank you.
5-year revenue trend, you can see for Emeryville, we had that dip during the pandemic. You can also see it was much more pronounced than some of our neighbors, Berkeley and Oakland. There are quite a few of these jurisdictions, their trend line is a little more stagnant per se. And again, some of that may do with Member Cattell's question about the employee count, which Walnut Creek uses, whereas others are using that gross receipt. But an interesting snapshot. Okay, then we went into a more detailed analysis with three cities in particular. And what we wanted to do here, it was look at the rate calculations by a handful of business jurisdictions. See there our current Emeryville rates and how that compares to Berkeley, South San Francisco, and Walnut Creek. Give you a moment to digest a lot of information on the page. I'll ask Jasmine or Eric if there's any salient thing you'd like to point out on this rate calculation spreadsheet, or if the committee has any specific question as you're looking through it.
Go ahead.
From my perspective, it seems like we would care about equity and efficiency, right? I don't know if equity would even really come up for the budget committee, maybe. Mm-hmm. But if in terms of efficiency, we care about like the elasticity, like how likely are they to leave or whatever. Mm-hmm. Are we going to see anything about that from any of this?
A little bit. We'll be talking about those principles. Mm-hmm. See if any of the slides get at the heart of that. If not, it's something we can discuss or look into.
The earlier cut of the data, like the 75 businesses are, or 100 businesses are 75, that's just typical, right? No?
I have varies from jurisdiction. Eric or Jasmine, do you want to jump in on that?
Sure.
Like a Pareto to me, but.
Yeah. So. That is pretty typical for gross receipts. It is more of a Pareto or power law distribution. That's not uncommon in, take a population of businesses. You're not likely to have a normal bell curve distribution. So that is pretty common. In terms of the sort of substitution effect, what's the likelihood to leave if we go up in the rate? We don't pretend to be economists, so we don't calculate that directly. Our experience is that these rates are so low, you got to remember it's a dollar per thousand, that they tend, historically, they have had essentially zero impact on retention. I will add a caution. We did 30 of these studies in 2024. There were quite a few councils, and I think rightly so, who were concerned that the overall tax burden in California combined with a raise at the local was going to create a greater risk of either non-compliance or relocation. And so we're in a period right now where, you know, we have to question a little bit the historical performance, which is that it's just never been enough for anybody to relocate their business. It just doesn't matter. You're only paying a ton of taxes if you're also making a ton of money when you're dealing with a gross receipts tax. So that substitution effect, you can find statewide studies that indicate, you know, that there might be one. But there aren't really any good local studies I've been able to find, and our experience is just generally at these kinds of rates, like a tenth of the sales tax rate is what we're talking about right now in your current rate, it tends not to be the deciding factor. That said, both contractors and professionals, as you'll see in the models, are susceptible to that conversation, and you want to go into that with your eyes open. Right. The higher rate may at the margins mean that some contractors decide they don't want to do jobs in Emeryville. And professionals, after COVID, professional firms have become far more fluid in where they're located than they were before COVID. So those are key things to take note of.
Yeah, just add anecdotally, I think it's pretty rare for a city to lose a business after a business license tax increase. I think in all the ones I've done, I've only seen it happen once in 40 years.
Okay.
Pretty rare.
So can I ask, related to this, like Former Mayor Scott Donahue would say that if you threaten Pixar, they'll pay more money. Like, you just sort of like intimidate them a little bit, because they choose how much they want to pay because they're located in Burbank. So they decide how much they want to pay year to year. And some years they pay more than other years. So I wonder if that, how true that is, if you see any of that in the data, or if something we should think about.
Well, I guess the one caution, though, is the individual business money is confidential, so you can't really talk about Pixar per se. But
yeah,
okay. So I just heard this, that if you take a slightly confrontational stance with Pixar, they'll pay you more money that year. I don't know if that's true or not.
How about this? Can I ask, is there concern about the TV movie production category, because it is a pretty large share of receipts?
So under the models that we'll present, concern, yes, there's sensitivity because of the concentration in that area, right? You're not going to defray the impact with a lot of other businesses. It's pretty concentrated. So yes, whenever you have concentration like that, you want to go in with your eyes open. What I will say is, my experience over the last two election cycles has been that many of the large businesses will grumble. Most don't wind up doing anything, but some will press on apportionment rather than relocation, right? And say, as you said, well, I don't have to pay as much. I'm just not going to allocate as much of my business activity to this location. And that's something that can happen and is to be expected to some degree. So I can't say and comment on a particular business, but in general, that's the area that the larger businesses tend to focus on is, okay, well, if the rate's going up significantly, which under these models, unless we're talking about moving the cap, I don't think it would be a huge rate increase. The cap really is what helps protect some of the larger businesses, and it is one of the major impacts to the equity or fairness conversation as well. Did I answer the question? I'm not sure I did.
I did.
Yes.
I have a question, but the smaller businesses pale in comparison in effect on the city as compared with biotech, for example. Is that not correct? That we're generating much more in a gross receipts tax from the biotech companies?
Well, yeah, again, I have to be careful of confidentiality, but generally that sector is... That's correct. If you look at the chart that we had up previously in the pie chart, then yes. As a matter of fact, again, because of the sort of, and I don't know which council member mentioned it, but a Pareto distribution that we have in the city, what you're going to see at sort of any scale is that your top X businesses will contribute disproportionately to the results. So for example, nearly a third of your revenue are from your top 10 businesses. Okay? And so when we look at that, because of the size and the potential within biotech, as opposed to, say, a smaller retailer, yeah, then that's clearly the case in terms of the results that you see.
Because it's gross receipts, it doesn't take into account margin. So, like, retail operates on thin margins. Other businesses don't. So, you can make a lot of money probably by relaxing the cap, but then that might really hit.
Well, I think that the challenge with the cap, and we talked about this before, is under the current ordinance, there's only one business at the cap. Now, there's a council member, as some of you know.
Oh, I didn't realize it.
Yeah, well, there's a council member who, prior to us sharing that information, said they were in favor of only raising the cap as far as the business license. And I said, that's not going to bring in much money because there's only one business mm-hmm. there. Now, as you go through this report, what you'll see is if you raise the rates, now you have anywhere from 2 to 4 businesses at the cap. So you have a few more, but it's still not marginally going to raise a lot of money for you.
But if you raise the cap to infinity.
Well, I think
not take all the money from that one business.
Well, I don't know about infinity necessarily, but one of the things that you'll see later in this report is that HDL is recommending removing the cap in all of their models. And I think that's primarily because these days most cities don't have a cap. And indeed, Sharon was talking earlier about the South San Francisco model. That was part of what they did mm-hmm. in 2024. They not only updated their rates, they removed the cap. And so, again, that's another discussion about how you affect those 1 to 4 businesses.
So we have 2 levers.
So if I were... If I hear what you're saying, if I'm a big business and there's a slightly higher rate and no cap, that could help the city, I think, a great deal than these other smaller categories.
Well, I think it's yes and no. I mean, because you only have a few businesses at the cap, if you either raise the cap or eliminated it, you're going to get some additional money. Okay. But it pales in comparison to increasing the rates for all the businesses.
Right.
In other words, if you're after trying to maximize the amount of additional revenue from this particular revenue source, you pretty much have to look at raising the rates for everyone.
Right. I wouldn't suggest only raising the rates on the 10 biggest businesses. They would have to be raised across every category, but the net effect would be that these bigger businesses would contribute a great deal more. Because they're contributing a great deal more now.
And we do have a slide that okay. has a hypothetical of what that cap might look like.
One more question. We're not considering having a progressive.
That is one of the options.
That's, okay.
more progressive, that's right.
So again, we'll just quickly note here, tax structure business scenarios. Sort of contextual of how a hypothetical business with a certain gross receipts and employees pay your current Emeryville structure in those 3 cities. And again, what that looks like in terms of potential estimated revenue. And again, I think we'll go into the modeling.
Just wanted to thank HDL and staff that I love this. This is like great research and good work put into it. And I think it is one of the things you had listed earlier that we wanted to see, like comparisons to neighboring and similar cities. So thank you for doing that.
You're
fascinating.
Welcome. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to look at 2 models. The first is a single gross receipts rate model. As the name implies, 1 gross receipt rate for all businesses. And with a small minimum fee, we would keep our exempt business definitions from our current structure and have that carry over. The model would have higher rates than our existing dollar per 1,000, and under this scenario, removes the current cap. You can see there on the slide the pros and the cons. No questions. We'll show what that might look like in terms of dollars. So flat rate, $25 flat rate up to $25,000 in gross receipts, and then the gross receipt tax increasing in this hypothetical model to $1.50. You can see down below, if we further increase that threshold to $2, what that net difference is under option 1, incremental increase over our baseline revenue, about $940,000. You can see under option 2, pretty substantial increase, almost $3.4 million more than what we have budgeted, bringing the total just under $10 million. And again, assuming we stay constant with our number of business. The second option, variable. This has a different rate for business based on the business type. Again, we would also include in this model consolidating those
large business categories down to 5. And again, you can see there the pros and the cons of this as well. And here's what those numbers look like. We'll jump to the next slide to the numbers, but here's a hypothetical option increasing the amount or the minimum rate based on the category. A contractor, general retail, property rental, services, professional, and exempt. You can see that magnitude. And again, those are all recommendations we look forward coming from this committee to the budget advisory and to council on what those rates might look like.
A significant item here is in option one, the city is proposing to drop the rate for the general retail to 0.75 instead of 1, and that's a recognition to the point that Commissioner Kritzberg raised about being progressive mm-hmm. and also profitability. Mm-hmm. That's done in some communities, but as you can see in one of the slides coming up, that has a major impact on how much revenue you're bringing in because you're giving them a reduction.
I want to ask a question. We have a lot of artists here, and $25,000 is it? They might just be limping along. I would feel better about increasing the amount to $50,000 or something like that, so that the flat rate, in other words, that they're not taxed. That we does that make sense to give them a higher threshold or flat rate?
That's well within the review of the committee to make that recommendation.
I wouldn't do it, but because if you're making $50,000, someone correct me if I'm wrong, you'd be paying $50.
Correct.
I think a $25 difference is fine. Like I wouldn't
change. Okay. Yeah. All right.
What the difference between services and professional here, what business would those be?
HDL, do you want to sure. answer that?
Yeah, please? I'd be happy to. Generally, services, you're talking about personal services, lawn care, other items in that range. Professional services typically requires some either higher education or professional certification by the state. Your lawyers, doctors fall into this category. Depending on how you want to define it, we've typically recommended that that also include some of your accounting firms and bigger consulting firms. Kind of what the professional technical and scientific services, if you were to look at the NAICS categories, that's roughly the professional services, and then personal services, barbershops, gardeners tend to be the two biggest typically in California.
So I think I'm a professional. My business is professional services. Okay, thanks.
You're conflicted out. You can't.
So I'm going to look at that.
And then here is what the model would conceptually look like under those rates. You can see a pretty significant increase, particularly under option 2, almost bringing in more than our currently budgeted revenue. Again, budget about 6.5. Under the Model 2, another 6.8, upwards of 13 million. Please.
Can I ask, on the general retail, option 2, I think, was 1.1%, but it's going down here by 300,000?
Mm-hmm. Wow. So cutting it.
I think that the HDL team can answer that, but I believe it's because they're being somewhat conservative okay. in their estimates.
That's correct. The main driver of that is that we, taking from current taxes, we apply a discount for future uncertainty against the estimated taxable gross receipts. So you've got some additional higher amounts there. You've also had a closure that we've backed out of a business that relocated, I think, that I won't name, but they were a decently sized contributor. And then the way that we've reassigned some of the categories into this, they would be getting a little bit of a tax break from their current reporting. So, but the biggest thing is, as Brian said, some discount that we've applied to the gross receipts estimate in the future here.
Wait, so you think it's partly because they're getting a tax cut, some of them, and also because some of them might leave or cut
their rent. Yeah, I can.
You say a discount.
What I mean by a discount is, we'll take a look at what was reported, say, last year in your gross receipts, and then we're going to apply, let's say it's a 10 or 15% discount to say, hey, what could happen in the economy? You know, we've got tariffs that are being fought over and their impact is still being felt by businesses. So we try to discount and go, say, from $2 billion, which is kind of what you're seeing in the current taxes. So the estimated gross receipts here in this column, we've discounted it, you can see, by about $0.3 billion, not quite, $2.23 billion roughly, and said, hey, let's be a little conservative in what we estimate the economy might look like a year or two down the road and what the returns would be here.
So it's combining both the changes in the economy with changes in reacting to the tax.
It could be, yes. It's
everything together.
Again, we've not seen a lot of direct reaction to the tax, as Brian indicated. Anecdotally, that's not been a major issue in the past, but it's sort of a generic uncertainty discount, right? So it could account for changes in their behavior. It could account for changes in the overall economy, but we are being conservative and discounting the estimated gross receipts, and that's why you see that decrease there.
I think in terms of the overall Emeryville budget and the business economy, you have seen businesses leave even in advance of any of these discussions. So I would suspect that regardless of whether you change the business license tax or you don't, you're likely to see businesses leaving the community because of the downturn in the economy, the tariffs, as Eric had said.
Would businesses, have you thought at all about the possible effect of these tariffs on businesses in Emeryville and what that might be?
Is it going to be a
major factor or a negligible factor?
You know, I don't yet know. Again, that's kind of why we have the generic uncertainty discount, because I don't have, for example, you can look at one set of economists who are saying that the businesses and end consumers in the United States are going to pay the full amount of these tariffs. And you can look at another school looking at effective tariff rates saying, we think some of the foreign countries are going to absorb some or all of that. I don't have a way of deciding how that's going to play out in the future. And so we are being somewhat conservative here. You've got legal challenges to whether some of the tariffs will even be implemented and for how long and at what level. So that amount of uncertainty, I can't really give a precise measure, but it is part of the reason we are discounting the gross receipts.
Is any consensus?
Okay, let's, if we can keep it moving, and we have other
sides. Again, here is a estimated revenue by Emeryville Current, the different models that we just looked at in the comparison with Berkeley, South San Francisco, and Walnut Creek by the hypothetical business class. And again, you can see quite the range even under some of these new enhanced revenue models where Emeryville would still be below some of the other cities in some of the categories. And you see that's quite a spread.
But above on others, for example, so to note back to the conversation on biotech, right? This, as you can see, the model does in fact put a greater weight on some of these biotech companies, assuming they were as large as this hypothetical, but you see roughly the same proportional increase.
And we talked just briefly about the cap analysis, and again, with those models, you could see how the cap dollar amount would be impacted. And I know we spent a significant amount of time, but I really feel that the business license warranted that time and attention. So if you have any other questions, feel free to ask why I bring up the other presentation.
Questions, members? Would you probably want us to make a motion at the end, yes? Not on each part?
Ideally.
Yeah.
But if great. It's in your mind right now and you want
to... Well, maybe I'll ask my fellow members. Do you want to talk about this one before we forget everything that just happened and go to the parcel and CFD? And...
I think that's a good idea.
Okay. I will just... Does anyone want to start?
Go ahead.
All right. So thank you for sending this. It was super fun to read. I know, I'm sorry. I'm a nerd.
You're the I'll right apologize. Guy for
this. Yeah, yeah.
He's really the right person.
I have some recommendations for a couple areas where I saw a number a little off, but anyway, I'll give you comments later. Okay. So I like the variable more. I think looking at that slide, I think it just makes a little more sense to me that retail should maybe either stay the same or go down in option one or option two. I guess I did that backwards. Because they, as you mentioned, they have small margins, mm-hmm. and it is my feeling only is that that is a struggling industry because of online retail and stuff. And so I don't want to push more out of Bay Street, for example.
A construction materials retail that has a high headcount that is operating at thin margins and seeing,
although they might be open,
double digit increases in their wholesale prices and yeah.
I'm sorry, which one did you say you're in favor of?
Well, I like variable. And then which one? I mean, it a little bit to me depends how much money we need.
Yeah, so that would be my question. Yeah. Like, we're not talking about expenses at all. We're only talking about revenue here. And then we see this big gap. And what is our goal? Are we assigned to pick things that will close the gap?
Yes.
Yes. Yes. So we would always just vote for the biggest revenue generating number
that won't drive businesses out of town.
They'd also not have a variability year to year.
We could also
uncertainty year to year.
I'm not at all saying this is what I would recommend, but we could say no, we like option one and find a way to reduce expenses or raise, set a $1,000 parcel tax or $20,000, you know, something. So I think on this individual issue, I don't think we have to say we have to go with the higher one.
Do you want a cap?
No, I think the trend sounds like caps are going away. Even the initial thing. I'm sorry.
No, I wanted just to add that there could be multiple of options right. you're going to choose from, not just business license solving right. the whole mm-hmm. problem. So mm-hmm. it could be part that.
Part oh, no, but even the biggest, even option two doesn't close the gap.
No,
that's correct.
It takes a big chunk out of it, yes, right. which we need the next thing to talk about right. to right. close the rest and yeah, raise more and.
Yeah, at the risk of jumping ahead, I think that if you look at revenue as the solution to your problems, and you don't talk about, as Sam indicated, the potential of reducing expenses, you would need to propose and get voters to approve either three or four of these five items, because you are out 13 million, you're out quite a bit. And that's part of the thing. But also, as Sam points out, which I think is not necessarily part of the report, but it is also an option. You are correct, Chair, that you could raise the parcel tax higher because originally we were scaling it based on what the city looked at in 2022 at 3.5 to 5 million. You could go to 10. However, there's also, and again, we get into Sarah's section of this, a sensitivity where traditionally you try not to have a parcel tax above north of, say, $100 a year on residential, and that's where you are at 5 million. So theoretically, yeah, you could propose 7.5, 10, 15, 20, but when we get later on to goes to BGC, goes to council, and then you poll the voters may say,
what do you think?
I don't know. Right. Also, parcel tax requires 2/3.
I think if you start piling on taxes that are really going to affect people who live here, the voters will definitely not go with that.
So why don't we, does anyone want to talk about the other options we saw in here were single flat rate? So I guess some of the questions maybe we can tentatively say, and we can come back to the one versus two when we see what revenue the other things generate for a final motion. But does anyone want to defend or speak in favor of the single gross receipts options?
The flat rate.
The flat rate.
I think I'm getting the feeling that we like variable and no cap. Is that?
I'm hearing variable, no cap, and retail being the same or lower.
But
actually, I thought we were the options were that were analyzed only raise the cap. They actually eliminate.
All of the options proposed by HDL eliminate the cap.
Oh, okay.
In their observation, and let Eric and Jasmine comment.
What was the point about raising the cap and then still only two or three?
Well, I think that there's a couple of things here. One is that the council level, there's one council member who has said he is definitely in favor of removing the cap. He would even put an item on the ballot to only do that. And so this has been discussed at the council level. And I think HDL's approach, and again, part of what we're doing here and bringing them in as the experts in the field, is asking them the questions, what is your thought? And I think they have, from the start, I think it's fair to say, said, we think you should eliminate the cap on all your models. That's their recommendation. That doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be your recommendation.
No, I'm in favor.
And I think what Brian was saying, not to speak for you, in terms of more people being affected by the cap, is if you raise the rates, more people hit today's cap.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
Okay. Do we have a fallback position if tariffs really change this discussion? In other words, if we have businesses that really are going to be struggling with these tariffs, is there any, if we make the suggestion now, can it flex if there is a really negative effect from tariffs?
Well, I think there's two things. One is that obviously when you adopt any of these revenue measures, you're setting a maximum. The council can always set the taxes at a rate lower than what the voters approve. Mm-hmm. But correct. The other thing you also need to understand is that the numbers we're showing you are the ones from May, and we haven't folded in the cap or the tariffs into the estimate of the city's budget deficit. So if the tariffs become a problem, the number you're solving for is going to probably be more than 13 million. It might be 15 or 17 million.
That's not good news.
Yeah. So
right.
I think we have to leave the tariffs outside of the room for today. Not saying you can't bring it up, please do, but like in terms of decision making, like there's too much unknown. It's going to hurt the city as well if tariffs do. It's going to hurt everybody, and we're all going to be in pain. So. Day by day.
So I think we can say variable no cap is what we
think. Variable no cap. And then maybe we come back to one or two based on what we talk about on the next item.
That's the plan.
Okay. Sure.
Very much.
Where's the rest of the money coming from? Yes, director.
is here. You're right here. Up the paper file. It's really,
we should all involve. It would be to pull all the money out of CalPERS and put it on crypto. We wouldn't have any.
Of course, if you pull out a CalPERS, then there's the exiting charge on the
end. Oh, is that right?
Yeah.
Put it on Trump.
You're saying, what is that? I always forget the number. The trust, the pension trust?
Yeah.
115.
115. Yeah, I think we'll have a motion to invest that in crypto. No? Okay. Not on the agenda today. All right. All right.
Then they'd get rid of the committee for sure.
Yes.
There would be no sunset period. It would just be dissolved.
Thank you very much, Assistant City Manager, for logistics help there. Next option, parcel tax. And we do have a representative from NBS here. Parcel tax, again, unlike our secured property tax, it's not based on value. It's amount that is levied on parcels based on a methodology that the committee may recommend and council would decide. It can be a flat amount for parcel, be a flat amount for building square footage, or it can also be established using different rates based on land use and development status. It can include an inflationary index, consumer price index. It can also allow for age or income-based exceptions. It's also important to note with the parcel tax, unlike all the other options that we're looking at, it would require a two-thirds voter approval. All the other measures, again, as long as they stay as general purpose, that would be a requirement of a simple majority by the voters. And again, the parcel tax boundary would be the city boundary as well. Just for context, we looked at other local measures from November 2024. 28 of the 42 passed, and you can see there a listing of some of the measures in the neighboring cities. I think important to note some, particularly in Berkeley, were already existing parcel tax that they were either increasing the dollar amount, and then some were completely new. So again, give a little bit of a flavor for how the parcel tax has played out locally. We'll go through a couple of the options. Again, the other revenues that we've looked at, we have a sort of dollar amount as our base for building the model. With business tax, we know what our gross receipts are. With sales tax, we know how much we've gotten in sales tax. With TOT, we know how much we've generated, and then we can make projections by changing the rate. For the parcel tax, we work backwards. We said, how much revenue do we want to generate? And if so, what would the rate look like for the parcels? So again, we did some hypothetical targets, 3.5 million all the way to 5 million. And looked at our taxable parcels, and you can see what that rate structure would look like at 3.5 million. A flat rate on the taxable parcels would be $721. And again, you can see down below the breakup of residential and non-residential. And again, if there's any questions, feel free to stop and we can answer while we're on the slide. The other alternative would be to look at building square footage. You can see the 3.5 million target would be about 19 cents a square foot and escalating out to 26 cents if you try to achieve $5 million in revenue. Again, you can see the breakdown by the residential and non-residential. Well,
can I ask, these require same level of approval, two-thirds?
Correct.
And are they more common, less common?
I would say that in recent years, these are becoming more common. There's a couple of reasons. One is because many cities have tapped out their other sources, like utility tax and business sales. You're in a somewhat unique position in that because Emeryville hasn't raised a number of these taxes in many years, you have more options than most cities. I think so that's the reason you're seeing more of these special taxes. And as you can also see by the size of the numbers, they can be quite lucrative. So,
and I'd say they're also, to some degree, a little more resilient to economic trends, per se, because you know what your parcel count is, probably won't be growing too much. You know what your building square footage is. So it's more consistent in that regard, although the flip is that you're really probably only going to grow by a inflationary index, per se, whereas if you're looking at business license, it's going to fluctuate based on how well businesses are doing in that gross receipt, the same, you know, sales tax or TOT, and it's going to fluctuate a little bit more based on you know, consumer confidence and spending.
Can you go back to the slide that had the different parcel taxes and the different reasons for those taxes?
Of course. Okay.
And is it important, it's the next slide after this, I think. Is it important to connect that, go back one, thank you. Yeah, is it important, one more.
This one.
Yes, this one, okay.
Is it important to connect the parcel tax to a benefit that residents will receive? And I'm looking at fire protection, I'm looking at community services, sidewalk and street repairs. Is there something or is...
Well, the reason that most cities do that is because you have to have a two-thirds vote anyway to do this.
Right.
So you usually earmark it. The reason that you don't do that with the other revenue types is because once you earmark it, it goes from a majority to two-thirds. This one is always two-thirds. And so that tends to be one of the reasons that cities will earmark why they're saying, well, we're going to do two-thirds anyway, so let's specific. You don't have to do that. But
Your question is, does it increase the chance that it succeeds?
Yes, right, exactly. Would it increase the pay?
And that comes out in polling later on.
Yeah. I think to some extent it is the decision of the elected bodies in those jurisdictions and responding to community needs and what they understand the community and the electorate really would like to spend additional funds on. And again, as Brian had noted, if this is a viable option, then during community survey and polling, there might be areas that could be specifically called out. And Sarah might have some additional insight as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Hello, everyone. I think that Brian and Sharon have recapped that, you know, accurately at this point, that there are a couple of strategies that Albany, for example, has several individual parcel taxes for very specific purposes, and it keeps those amounts fairly low. So you can see on this slide, just in November, they had their sidewalk tax. That was a replacement of an existing parcel tax with it, but also a restructure. And then they also have individual parcel taxes for very specifically paramedic and ALS and fire protection. So they've used that strategy where there are other communities that take a broader approach. You know, so like Oakland with the fire prevention, right? Like that's a broader kind of thing. And so you can look at, or Berkeley has a lot of very individualized things as well. So just, you know, there's a couple of strategies there. And I think that the polling that you do will help to hone in what are the things that are important to the community, because two-thirds is a very high hurdle to achieve in terms of voter support. And so it really will come down to what are the things that are resonating with the community that will generate the level of support needed to pass the parcel tax.
And there's a lot of election strategy that could happen later. Like you could,
right.
So we could recommend a certain size parcel tax here, but it may be by the time polling's done, be split into two parcel taxes that add up to the same amount. And you say one of them is for your police and fire, and one of them is for bike and pedestrian safety and planning. And,
well, it also right. could be the case, too, that you advance at least two and maybe even three items, because when you poll, it could be the case for, I mean, I don't know, but the case could be that perhaps a business license tax and a hotel tax would be passable, but a parcel tax would not. And that's one of the things that normally when you poll, you do more than one, because if you poll only on one and it's underwater, then you don't start to have a measure.
And I would just further add with that strategy too, not only being responsive to community need and what surveying reveals, but also we're trying to look at our general fund deficit. And so typically, if you look at some of those things like public safety, that's a large majority of the general fund. So, in theory, if you had a specific parcel tax for some of those items, it could free up the general fund contribution to go to other things. Mm-hmm. But again, that would be down the road as part of the strategy. So very good question, Anita. So we'll continue on. Again, we looked at that. We looked at building square footage. And here is an example of rate by land use. And you see here a little bit of a blend of residential per non-residential per building square footage. So again, you can have those options as well. And again, as we talk about potential recommendations, there's also a discussion of potentially having an exemption, either based on age or income as well, which has not been factored.
Yeah, another key difference here, obviously, is on the three models, that the first two models, the rates on residential are much higher, and on the third one, the rates on commercial are higher. So, for example, right. The first rate, everybody pays $721. In the second rate, second rate residential is paying $384. Here you've dropped it all the way down to $50 to $125 a year, which is typically the sort of range you could pass such a measure from the voters. Again, that's as you look at the three models, that's also something to keep in mind.
And projection of that growth, again, annual increase magnitude of 2 to 3% would look like.
And you build that into the measure.
You could.
You could.
Yeah.
But like as in, you have to if you want it to be.
Well, again, you have a couple of choices. One is because this is, there is annual, depends on how much money you're trying to get at. If you want $3.5 million, for example, and you're looking at that number, and that's the number, you don't build in a growth factor. I think the reason that the growth factor was looked at in 2022 in Emeryville was because they were trying to get from 3.5 to 5 million, because back then that was the deficit, 5 million. Now the deficit is more like 13. But again, that's another, so I think here, again, as you can see in all of these things, there's a lot of moving parts here. Which model you look at, whether in this case, whether or not you look at an annual increase, and then how much money are you trying to generate? Is it 3.5? Is it 5? And I think to the chair's point, it's also the case that obviously when you start polling, that's part of what you're going to poll on is will people support a parcel tax and also at what level,
But I guess that's my, the last line there. So I sort of, if you want it to grow beyond 3.5, you either need the growth in the factor, which would be square foot, or you need to have an escalator in there that's inflation.
Well, or you start out at a higher number. In other words, from year one, you could start out at 5.
But in year 20, you have a problem because it has not grown at all. And you've got to go get 2/3 to increase it again.
Right?
That's correct. Okay.
So, we're at, aren't parcel taxes often used for bond measures?
They can be, although there's also yet a whole other category.
But I'm just wondering if the examples we looked at were those bond measures, the list of sidewalks, et cetera. I mean, maybe not for sidewalks, but so these were all examples of just.
I think these are just examples for
just money to go into the general fund.
Correct.
Okay.
We'll pause here. This is the last slide on special tax and see if the committee has any additional technical questions, and then I'll defer to the chair if you want to have a little bit of discussion on special tax before we the other options.
Do it. Special tax. Any tech? Yeah, please.
So I think I'm missing something very great. What is it now?
You don't have one.
We don't have any special, but what is the tax burden people are experiencing right now?
For the city of Emeryville?
Well, they're paying their property tax.
Right, property tax, so but there's no specific parcel tax.
Yeah, this would be
all taxes.
Right, I understand it's in addition to. I'm trying to get a sense of someone looking at this and they're thinking, well, I already pay X a year.
Right.
Now you're asking me to pay X plus Y.
True.
That's what I'm that's how
people it, are it would be that's property tax, which is because of Prop 13 a mess. So there's no single yeah. And so guess, like yeah. I'm paying a lot, someone who's lived here a long time is not.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So highly variable.
Yeah. But it's only a property tax, just right. the share of the 1%. And then it's a GO bond.
Right.
Correct.
Yeah.
And under this model, again, the rates are flat. There's, you know, it's not, it doesn't have a natural like 2% or assessed value like the property tax. So right. it could have, you know, an inflationary.
Yeah.
But it's not like, you know, if you're, parcel was reassessed, you would still pay hypothetically the $721 when increased because now your home is worth $2 million more, unlike your secured property tax.
Yeah, it's a function of when, to the chair's point, when you bought your property.
Right. I don't think, question on the Arts Center, I don't think that's funded at all. I could be wrong.
It's not, no, it's not.
It's, yeah.
There's no funding sources. Yeah.
It's an unfunded project. Yes.
Yeah.
There's some money set aside for the project, but it's not enough to do the project.
But it's not a general fund. It's not going
to. It would typically be a capital project. And that is the sort of thing where somebody mentioned earlier, general obligation bond. That's the sort of thing you could use a general obligation bond for.
I seem to recall there was a thing, a mental anchor around $100. Someone mentioned.
Yeah, right. That's again. This gets into the polling zone, but yeah, typically
that relates to the
right
second from the right.
Well,
option not on this slide, but on the other one.
Well, yeah. The reason I pointed that out is because as you look at the three options, the third option does in fact get you in that range. You're at $50 to $125, so you're probably around, and Sarah would probably comment on this as well. The sort of range where cities can pass these things, whereas if you look at the two other models where you're over 300 or over 700, those would be, I would say, much more challenging to pass. But Sarah, I don't know if you want to weigh in on that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, certainly polling will help you make a determination about a particular amount. But that's one of the nice things about the building square footage rate is that it seems so much lower. Because you're not putting the actual amount that goes on the tax bill in front of your voters, you're putting the rate in front of your voters. So if you go back and look at that option, you know, you're looking at something that is a little bit lower. But let's see. On the per building square foot. So, I mean, here you're talking about, you know, 18 and a half cents, 21 cents, et cetera, to reach those numbers. But the average tax for a residential parcel is actually 356. So that is some of the psychology around the building square footage tax, where if you're looking at the flat tax per parcel, for example, then you know, or even a tax based on land use at a flat rate, those numbers have to be pretty high and you have to put that full number out. You know, that's the rate, right, is the actual number. So that's some of the psychology around the different scenarios here. And then that benefit of the building square footage, I modeled what that increase might be based on the historical growth in building square footage over the last few years. So, you know, and I tried to be conservative because there's no guarantee to that, but that does allow for some growth without having to ask the voters for an inflator, right? So those are kind of those two benefits relative to the building square footage methodology as opposed to the others. I will also say that the building square footage data is, we rely on the county assessor's tax roll data to inform the data for building square footage. And that is not always 100% accurate. And, you know, there can be places where there's missing data and so forth, right, in that field. So there are some challenges that come along with that, but there are also a few things you can do to mitigate those challenges, including, you know, saying if we see property on the secured roll, the assessor's data, for example, that has improvement value, meaning the assessor has valued some sort of building or structure on this property, and yet the building square footage field in that data is zero or blank, then we're going to assign some nominal square footage amount to that, right? So there's some strategies that you can kind of mitigate a little bit given the data problems. So hopefully that's helpful just to kind of dig in a little bit in terms of, you know, evaluating which of these might be the best option.
Can I just time check? 3 p.m. is when we're scheduled to end, correct?
Yeah.
Okay, we have 11 minutes. When we get there, we may have to get a motion to extend. Let's try to move fast without cutting off discussion too much. So there's three options here. Tax per parcel, no page numbers on this, but tax per parcel seems like the least likely to succeed and the hardest for our residential folks. Anyone in favor of that one?
I don't think I'm in favor of parcel tax at all.
Okay. Actually. Talk about why, if you don't mind.
I just think if you're thinking of adding between, I'll say between $500 and $1,000 per.
Well.
Right.
But no. Yeah.
Right.
Could be $50.
Right.
On the third option.
Right. But it wouldn't have much meaning if it's $50. I
mean, but you're raising the same amount of money. Basically, what's happening is on the third option, commercial paper.
So I'll just preview. I like this one because you can
see which one? The first one?
This is the third option.
Oh, the third one.
Yeah. This whole slide would be the third option, as I understand it.
Mm-hmm. And what I like about it is you can set the residential at 50, or if you look at the top table, as much as 125, mm-hmm. which I think is still somewhat palatable. Somewhere around $100. And yet you would then set the non-residential as a per square foot. And so that's what really brings in the revenue. The residential almost doesn't bring in enough to do anything about.
Would it have a negative effect on the business, on attracting businesses?
I think, not to answer for staff, but they will say, we don't really know, but probably not.
Well, again, I mean, these are becoming more and more common. So one of the questions you have is if a business says, well, gee, I'm leaving Emeryville, I'm going to go to Berkeley. If the Berkeley rate's even higher than what you're doing, that's really not an option. So that's part of the challenge is over time, as more and more cities adopt these special parcel taxes, sort of like if you're a business, where would you go and not hit one? So, but as I think as the chair points out, and you can see in the bottom table of these two tables, what you're doing in the $3.5 million example is you're raising $400,000 from the residents and $3.2 million from the business. Whereas in the other models, it's a little more evenly distributed, which means, you know, to Fran's point, the residents are paying either, you know, in the $300 or $700, which if you use that $100 benchmark, would be pretty challenging, even for a majority vote, much less 2/3, I would think.
I would only vote for model 3.
But, you know, so we're again, like the other tax, we're the only city that doesn't have any parcel tax now in the neighborhood.
I don't know that you're not the only one, but you're certainly one that doesn't. And as I think Sarah had pointed out, you've got places like Albany where they've used this tool, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas here it'd be something new.
I think there's at least one strong 3. I'm a 3. Is anyone a 2? The value of 2, as Sarah explained, is you don't have to put how much it is for residential on the ballot. You just put the rate. People have to do the math in their head of how many square foot do I have times 0.185 in the example on that. Yeah, on there. And then, oh, wait, it does add up to 356 if I'm the median house.
I think that's tricky.
Well, why do you not do that with 3?
Three, you have to put $50 on if you're setting it at $50 for the land use.
Yeah, 3 is a flat rate for residential.
For residential.
Oh, so it's a flat rate.
You have to pay a square foot for commercial.
That's... Even if it's 100, but I wouldn't go over the 100. I would just flat.
Yeah, and I think that's another consideration as well. The committee could say, to Fran's point, you'd recommend it at the $4.5 million target, not the 5, to keep it at or below 100. You could do that.
Or up to the 4.
Yeah.
Correct. So and also, I think that's the sort of thing that would be pulled if you went to the BGC and the council and said, we think you ought to look at the parcel tax, then the pollster and the strategist would say things like, would you favor a parcel tax? What about at 50? What about at 75?
I mean, it seems like you could tweak this one to make it like number 2 in terms of the calculation and keep the numbers around.
not sure I get it. But number two, the fundamental difference is you're not doing a per, you're doing a per square foot.
For everybody, which means the residential pays quite a bit more. That's why. Whereas number three, you're having a flat rate for residential.
Oh, you can't have two per square foot rates, residential and commercial?
Yeah, but they're paying more. That's what they're trying to.
I see what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, so instead of really low one.
Tweak number two.
And back into the same low.
So you're at, instead of 0.185.
Instead of really low one for residential.
Since it's 356, it'd be like, you'd almost have to go 0.0185.
Something like that, yeah.
But then people might ask, why are you charging, what's going on? Why are you charging businesses?
Well, and I think what would happen too in any of these, at least my experience, whether it's this tax or business licenses, often you give people during the campaign an opportunity to find out what they would be paying at such a tax. And the difference between two and three is, in three, it's very specific for the residents. They know exactly what they're paying. It's $50. Mm-hmm. Whereas if it's a percent per square foot, it gets back to the chair's point where if I'm a recently purchased my property, I'm way over $50. If I've had my property a long time, I might be at 50 or 75 or whatever.
Oh, yeah. And so in three, it might be better to make it certain, concrete.
That's how I feel about it.
Well, and again, the other thing in three is, remember, you know, when you're talking about the voters are the ones that have the residential property.
Exactly. People,
businesses don't.
You know, if I'm voting for something and somebody else is paying for it, am I going to think about it?
Exactly. So if it's 50 or even 100 bucks a year, all right, cool. And yeah, it gets me exactly. Police, more
especially
police.
If it's tied to some benefit that I, public safety or.
So I think number three, keep your thoughts on how much it goes up to. Should we do a motion to extend right now?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Let's actually, you have till 3:30. It's a 2-hour.
Right.
So starting at 1:00.
Yes. Oh, 3:30.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, good. Okay, yes. Good.
Okay. Never mind.
Never mind. Well, let's get it done, folks. All right. Here we go.
Do you have a question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yes. But I'm afraid this is another silly question. Okay. So it doesn't have the table numbers up here, but it's so here. We have number of taxable parcels at 4,010, the total building square footage of a 7.6, right? Then in here, residential per unit by 4.4 is 7,872. What's the residential per unit versus taxable residential parcels? So if you're looking in the report, page 4.4 on PDF page 4 versus table.
Oh yeah, why are there more unit than parcels? Is that the question?
I'm a little bit confused about what the difference in the definition is.
Multifamily, maybe?
Multifamily.
So yeah, right. Are we taxing condos differently?
So with a parcel, when you're taxing just parcels, you're just taxing the
parcels, right? So a condo would be taxed the same flat rate or the same per square foot rate, right? As
but the residential per unit is if you are a property owner and there's 20 units on your property, you're paying per unit. Versus if you are the condo owner and you are playing just for your unit, even though it's multi-unit residential.
Are we getting it, Sarah? All
right. Yeah, that's exactly right. So there could be a duplex, for example, that would pay based on having two units versus a single family residential or a condo parcel that would only have a single unit on it. Yeah, that's absolutely right.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure we're on the same page there.
That was great.
It wasn't defined.
Yeah, that is
not a silly question.
Yeah, that's a good question. Sure.
That's where the land planner gets.
There you go. That's right. That's why you
are. Why are we talking about units and parcels anymore?
Don't we want every person who gets a property tax bill to get a parcel tax bill?
Well, that would be an
amazing. It'll be part of their property tax.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So.
Sorry.
On the residential by land use. Sorry.
No, I'm too aggressively trying to move us along. Please.
No, going. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I'm working through this. So this is table. Sorry, I'm scrolling back.
This one doesn't exist.
Is there any special reason why the parcel per parcel tax couldn't also just be a per unit tax?
And that's sort of what the next, that's sort of option three, right?
If you make it a flat one, yeah, for the residentials.
Yeah, which is
the, yeah, in that case, for the bed, in that case, with the residential being flat, yeah.
What rate are we suggesting for the non-residential? Are we suggesting a rate?
Well, the next slide has a rate showing on it, but it that would be at the 3.5 target.
I think you'd have to scale it up to get to the higher revenue amount.
Right. Well, and again, that's what it shows you, both right. in terms of the flat rate for residential and the first worth of commercial. It shows you what it would be if we didn't have at four.
So it's that 27 per square foot.
And we're not trying to consider a vacancy tax, residential or non-residential. That's
so far, well, so far, this committee and the
BGC. I mean, I know Berkeley has one.
That's right. There's one council member who would like that to be explored. And so far, both committees and the council have said they're not interested.
Okay.
The other thing, too, by that one, by the way, and I know Sharon and I have had this discussion, is if that tax were part of your problem over time, the amount of revenue would drop because you're trying
to... Well, it's more of a policy. It's not...
Well, that's right. And again, in the cities that have it, typically it doesn't go into the general fund. It right. usually goes into a housing fund or something else, which again causes a whole other set of issues in terms of then it has to be two-thirds if you earmark it. And then you also have to explain it, what it is, which a lot of people are finding it hard to kind of grok. What exactly, what are we taxing vacant homes or vacant commercial right. building, vacant pieces of land? You have the realtors typically oppose it. So many cities have flirted with it and then said, you know,
that's... If you fix the issue too, you're not going to get any revenue.
Right.
There's nobody.
You know, when I look at this and I look at the great difference between the residential and non-residential, I would actually look more, I think it's more fair to do $100 per unit tax, parcel tax, because the difference is just so, it's too great.
And are you saying, and not scale up the commercial? Because there is, if you look on the top table, there is a $100 yeah. option, but right. it scales up the per square footage. So I would do that probably to get $4.5 million.
Again, part of the question too here is a math question. How do you get to 3.5 to 5 million? And if you obviously charge the commercial flat rate just like residential, you'd be nowhere near these.
Right. No, I'm saying the variable, it would be a variable rate for commercial
yeah.
and a flat rate for residential. And as I look at this, I think $100 in this environment is tolerable.
Yeah.
$50 is too, it's too little.
And that would get you 4.5 million.
That's correct.
And all these options are about 85-15 split.
Well, the third one. Yeah. The first two, everybody's, the first one, everybody's paying the same. Everybody's paying.
No, I'm talking about the target. Different, you know, all the targets yeah. are around 85-15 for this option. Yeah. And so we're going to be just recommending, I guess this question, we're going to be recommending which option, but with a target is going to be based on polling.
If we could do that,
and you can give a range.
Like, well, I think at the end of the day it will be by the council. But I think in yeah. terms of right yeah. now, what the question before this group is, which of these five measures might you recommend to the BGC and the council? Understanding that to balance the budget with revenue only, you're going to need to do three or four of the five. Yeah. It's almost more like which one would be.
And so we're expressing as our committee a preference for anything really. We could say we love all of it, do all of it.
Well, I mean to use an example, in May, what this committee said was you would recommend the business license tax, the parcel tax, and perhaps the hotel, and you'd be less inclined to look at the utility tax and sales tax. That's what you said in May. And the question is, obviously, now that we're, you know, in September, is that still where you are or not? And then related to that, now you have multiple models, not to make this too difficult for you. But
well, so, and I'll add a complication. Do we as a committee want to recommend discounts or exemptions for over a certain age, and then for income.
I would follow the property tax model.
I would not do anything at all. And I feel strongly about it.
Okay.
Or income. But age, I don't think is fair.
There's a lot of racial. And I think to that point, that is kind of the trend, is most cities now are, if they have an exemption, it is based on income, not age, because the logic is that some people could be seniors or retired but have a whole lot of income or money.
Yes.
And typically what they also do is they use the what they call the PG&E CARES program. So rather than having to get income data from people to qualify the exemption, they just say, show us your proof you're on the CARES program, and then we'll assume that you are income challenged. If you want that. But I think to Chair's point, you're right. You could recommend that or you could not recommend that.
I would leave it out because it adds a complication. And at 50 or 100 bucks, if you do own property, I think you can afford 100.
I don't think it needs to be age related, but I do think it may be income related.
We can put that in the motion.
Yeah.
If you're going to have an exemption.
Right, because I think it's more fair. I just think it's more fair.
And is an exemption a complete exemption or is it a reduced? I'm just asking.
Well, again, it's up to the committee and the council, but usually it's a complete exemption, but it doesn't have to. Usually what the laws, what the cities that have an exemption say is, if you're in the CARES program, you pay zero.
You know,
and then, of course, what it does is if you're still trying to raise 3.5 to 5 million, you have to raise the tax rates for everybody else to cover the exemption.
I think it sounds good. I think it helps sell it.
That's true. Like, hey, we've got a discount if you're low income.
Yes. And I don't know how many people, right, I don't think it affects very many, but I think it's just a caring way of doing
it. It's a signal.
Right.
Okay. How are we feeling? Good on what someone would make a motion on this one. I think I
make a motion for the third option.
Probably no more than 4.5 was what I was hearing from Fran. And then with an income-based exemption that's based on PG&E CARES, or maybe we just say an income-based exemption, let someone else figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah, good. I don't want to rush, but I'm keeping
back. Say it one more time.
option three, with the flat for residential, per unit for non-residential, up to the $4.5 million target. So, or maybe said another way, up to 100 for residential.
Yeah.
I thought it was per square foot for residential, no?
No, it's residential.
It's flat.
Flat ones, okay.
And then maybe we just say, maybe really the key is residential, no more than 100. Do what you want with the non-residential. Up to like, we're okay with the options presented, but no more than 100 for residential with an income-based exemption.
Yeah.
I see head notes. All right.
Are we giving any spread to... non-residential, the per square foot charge, or we're leaving it at this charge?
Leaving it open to the wording that he just used.
Okay, all right.
Unless you want to do something different, nope. But I'm good, yeah.
I want a measure that will pass, that's what I want.
Well, but again, and remember that because of the size, you're definitely going to need more than over
right.
time.
Right.
Well, you don't
we
have
understand.
To do them all.
Okay. Option three, local sales taxing.
We can hopefully...
we're getting there.
Spend less time on these. There. Thank you, HDL. I had to jump off, and thank you very much, Sarah. Appreciate
thank you, Sarah.
Your expertise.
Thank you.
Transaction and use tax, we'll call it sales tax, per se. This city of Emeryville, our tax rate right now is 10.5%. That's... includes the state sales tax, local measure F, as well as county initiatives. It's different in why it's called transaction and use as compared to sales tax is that it's on the point of receipt or use. So what this means is that, as we put in the staff report, if you purchase a car outside of Emeryville, but you register it in Emeryville, Emeryville gets the sales, gets the transaction and use tax. If you buy something online, but it's delivered to Emeryville,
Emeryville gets this, that sales tax because it's a transaction in use. It's a point of sale, a point of receipt or use, not the point of sale. So it's not like I bought my car in Pasadena. Pasadena gets the sale. My car is being used in Emeryville. Emeryville gets the tax. So little.
Well, the reverse is not true. Right. So, like, if someone buys a book at Barnes & Noble.
Well, but they bought
it. They don't go in a special line.
And they read it in San Francisco.
Because in Washington and Oregon.
There's no duty.
There's a line for the Oregon people at Walmart.
There you go.
So,
a big deal because one state doesn't have an income tax, one state doesn't have a sales tax.
Yeah, living in Vancouver, Washington.
Yeah.
So again, modeling Measure F, which the voters passed, that it's estimated to generate $2.25 million. So if you put another quarter cent there, we assume it would generate roughly the same 2.25%. However, you can then see the sales tax rate, 10.75, similar to some of the other cities, but less than, say, your neighbor Berkeley at 10.25, or Oakland at 10.25. So, again, when people choose to purchase their items somewhere else because of that differential determined. So, unlike our business license, where we looked at the makeup by business type, are TUT, or transaction in use, by transaction category, the majority is retail. 37% of the sales taxes in the category retail, 16%, the orange is food, and then you can see construction, transportation, business to business, and miscellaneous. So the one thing about transaction and use tax in terms of equity is any resident, visitor, business that purchases a good or service in Emeryville pays that tax. So on the one hand, it's equitable, although there's a lot of literature on whether or not it's regressive as well, because items are more expensive, although typically sort of life necessity things are exempt. It's move on or ask or take any questions you may have.
Is this it on TOT?
Yeah, that's it.
Maybe we talk about this one real quick. This is not my favorite. It raises an awful lot of money for a 50% vote, right? Because this gets approved just with majority.
Yeah, majority.
So how do you all feel about it?
We're already kind of maxed this one out.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with that. I would not touch this.
And in the packet, they rank it, they sort it by rate, and so you can see it a little better than you. Interesting, we are the only 10 and a half. So everyone else is 10 and a quarter or 10 and three quarters.
Yeah, it's really even, like, that above and below.
Yeah.
It's that,
right in the middle.
Yeah. Right in the middle.
So we are unique.
We are we're very special people.
And that was Measure F, which I believe was 2020?
Yes.
That the voters approved. Again, general purpose tax comes in the general fund, but I believe it was particularly for public safety and child development support. But again, general purpose, it was not earmarked.
Yeah,
right. It's general, those few different positions for public safety and public work, like engineers and code enforcement.
The shift to a use tax probably because of Amazon?
No, this is the local option, as they call it, taxes are all transaction.
Mm. But it was only a few years ago. I mean, it's been several years ago, but that started catching Amazon.
Yeah, well, that's a whole different discussion. But basically, there was state legislation that required Amazon to pay.
A little share kind of in a way that there are some sales tax we propose that would still increase our sales tax, even if we don't increase it.
The county or the state.
Yeah. And then could county, if it does, it could take our, basically right. take the 25.
Well, they could, but it's unlikely, I would say, because you already have other cities at the cap. So it would be unlikely, it's not possible, but unlikely that the county would take the remaining cap, but only for some of the cities involved.
Mm.
Again, it's possible. There's also from time to time been cities asking about, can you raise the cap? And in recent years, when those bills have gone to Governor Newsom, he's vetoed them all. So I think that that's not likely. So the cap is the cap, at least for now.
But that is also
one of the strategy is potentially use your cap before another entity takes it.
But I mean, sales taxes are regressive.
Can we move on?
Yeah, I think, unless anyone wants to, yeah.
Okay, TOT, transient occupancy tax, hotel tax. This is collected on transient guests for staying in hotel, which, again, has a long list of definitions in the Muni Code of what constitutes a hotel for dwelling, lodging, or sleeping purposes for less than 30 days. Our budgeted revenue for the fiscal year is about $5.5 million. You can see it was slightly higher in the out years, but we're expecting a pretty flat increase again, similar to transient occupant tax, like RTUT. consumer, it's really driven by economic factors, consumer demand, preference. People have the means to travel and where do they want to travel. But our current rate is 12%. Each increase of 1% would generate roughly $450,000 to $500,000, depending on how well we're doing that year. So you could go 1%, you could potentially go up 2% to reach 14%. And you can see there how you would compare to your neighbors. Berkeley is at 12%, Oakland's at 14%, San Francisco. The one factor about this is typically voters approve it because it's charged on visitors, but you can see there could also be a competitive advantage of keeping it a little lower.
Yeah, the history on these is typically they're easy to pass insurance at one because the voters aren't paying for it, and two because if people are considering a hotel, nobody really pays attention to what the hotel tax rate is.
You think that's true of new development of hotels too?
Yeah, the other key thing too, by the way, on this one is the tax is paid by the person renting the room. It isn't the hotel is not paying also. Mm-hmm. So I think what happens at the end of the day is in most cases when these are proposed, the hotels are not opposed and the voters also will say, well, I'm not paying. And
is that right? The hotels don't get.
I wonder if they will start because now you have to list the full price, right?
Again, you know that I did one just recently in 2024 with another city, and again, it was not only did it passed by 78.5%. Over, if there was a blockbuster, and it only polled at like 58, so they were kind of startled with it. And again, when you talk to people in the community, everybody said, "Well, I'm not paying that. That's great. You know, there's maintaining services, and I don't pay. That's my favorite."
To what extent have we recovered from the downturn in?
It looks flat.
Yeah.
I was going to say,
not much to your question. Our high was about 5.9. We've been down a little bit, and we're projected to be pretty.
And I would imagine too that in Emeryville, typically the folks staying in hotels are probably business related. They're not tourists, which also I think is one of the reasons that it doesn't vary as much because your clientele is not the traveler, but rather is the business who's
right.
In some cases, it's a temporary worker who's working at one of the life science companies for a couple of weeks, or they're at a conference or something. And so if that sort of activity is consistent, then your TOT is going to be consistent.
Or UC around the corner.
UC,
right.
I know.
Individuals
choose to stay in Emeryville when they're visiting their
strikes is a big one.
So I think there are a number of people who do stay in hotels in Emeryville versus San Francisco because the hotel rates in Emeryville are not cheap. That's for sure. So I'm not sure to what extent raising the tax affect occupancy.
Definitely doesn't.
Because to your point, your TOT is compounded by the two factors, right? The room rate, the average room rate, and the occupancy. And then whatever that base is, then the 12% or
there also are some 14% additional rates charged, like a tourism tax or whatever, in some of the cities. I don't know or don't believe Emeryville has anything like that. So sometimes, if, for example, if you say San Francisco charges 14%, if they also have hotel assessment and other things, the actual tax is even higher than 14. Yes.
When I stay in New York, I would say the taxes are about 20% of the bill.
Yeah.
And I mean, you could just faint when you get when you get the whole bill. However, to go from 12 to 14, I think is, I don't know. I need to see.
And you only get $1 million.
So I want to ask the hotel, thing that I'd like to do is ask the hotel managers here, to what extent do they feel an increase in the TOT tax is palatable before I...
To their customers.
Yes, exactly. I'd like their input. If they say it's not going to affect anything, then fine.
Well, one thing I remember from Economic Development Committee, when there was a hotel person on there, and she said that 70% of the profit for the year came from sales reps.
Yeah.
And then the other thing she said was that at one point, one of the hotel chains downgraded their brand.
Yeah.
And she said that all the other hotels have to price match. But if you look at the trend, it was flat. So like that included that. Whenever that happened, didn't seem to have any effect. So I don't know. Whatever she was saying, it didn't seem to have any effect on us.
We also might not have had the same recovery somewhere else did. Like maybe
I will say pre-pandemic, we haven't recovered yet to pre-pandemic numbers.
Right. Oh, yeah. It started in 2020, didn't it? Yeah. Yeah.
But I knew, if I recall correct, we were higher than most of these years in TOT.
Mm-hmm. The business traveler is not really concerned about the tax. The business traveler is
they're not paying. Their loss. Exactly. Companies pay.
It's the conferences that are happening.
Right.
They're having totally come back to the levels that were pre-pandemic.
That's right.
Because when they were booked in San Francisco, they were then coming over here and taking
overseas.
Yeah.
To which point, I know it's not a huge revenue thing, but this can make a lot of money in a tight year. I mean, it can make a big difference, I'm saying, in a tight year. And I don't think we're not, yes, there's people with very low rates here. We are not directly competing with Pleasanton, right? We are not directly competing with
the far away.
Right. Yeah, it's much more local than that. And if you look at San Francisco at 14, and we know their rates are higher, and compare with Berkeley, okay, 12, but Oakland's at 14. You know, I think it's a smaller area. I'm totally fine with raising this. I think it can make a big difference in really tight years, but on a day-to-day, not have a high impact. I'm fine with it, personally.
You talked me into it. Seriously, yeah. I also like that it changes with rates, right? It changes with the room rate.
It's right.
And so maybe one of these hotels will upgrade the brand in the future or redo the hotel and then raise rates higher.
And if they're cutting rates because it's not a competitive time of year, it's proportional to that as well, right? So they're going to be reading the market and what rates they can change. And when Salesforce comes through, right?
700 in it?
Yeah.
Okay. Any other comments on TOT?
I'd like to propose up to a maximum of 14% and to ask the hotel managers for input.
Okay. Save that for the motion?
Yes.
But think utility users tax?
Yeah.
All right.
One, currently 5% on utilities, which is about a little under $5 million. This one, staff actually sees it likely to increase, barring any change, because electricity rates are up. Again, several of our neighbors are charging more than Emeryville. So a 2% increase, estimated to be a little under $2 million. There's the possibility to also add a video service, brings in incremental additional amount. There's a possibility of also recommending to remove our cap of 75,000, although we're not quite sure, you know, what that would generate in terms of dollars without really getting knee deep in utility user data. Video service may be a little challenging. I know too, even our utility user tax, we're facing some challenges with the getting some of the providers to report correctly now that we have so much solar, which is a good thing. But you know, when they're doing their calculation, they're not reporting on that. So this one already has a little bit of its challenges. But again, you can see where our neighbors.
I think when we talked to our audit firm on this, they pointed out to us that almost all of our neighbors have video and Emeryville does not. So they said that was their first recommendation. You guys really ought to have video. And then the second is they noted that multiple cities are significantly above. I mean, you're kind of at the moment in the lower third in terms of your rate at 5.5. But well, the median's like 7.5, which is where the 2% came in. But you've got cities all the way up to Richmond at 10, which is almost double what you're charging. So there's certainly some room there. I think to Sharon's point on the maximum, we would have to go out and talk to three of the utilities to figure out what that would be. And so we didn't get into it because in the past, both at this committee level and also at the council level, there seemed to be some folks not excited about messing with the utilities or tax. So we thought before we spend the extra staff time and money to figure out about the cap, we first need to see, is there any interest in this one at all?
So is this a Comcast tax versus a streaming tax? If somebody's streaming, do they?
The streaming portion of video is tied up in court right now. So if you added video at the moment, you'd only be getting a cable piece.
Okay.
The other variable in that, by the way, is because of people who are what they call cord cutting, the cable piece is dropping each year. To Sharon's point, what you're seeing in this revenue for Emeryville is that in gas and telecom, it's sort of flat, but electricity is where the action is because PG&E keeps raising the electrical rates. So that's the reason your UUT is going up every year.
It also means our utilities as a city and running things are also going up. So
yeah,
I know we're on the low side of this one. Especially because it's electric and gas, I don't feel good about it. It's maybe the most regressive because sales tax at least excludes food. So you can argue it's slightly less regressive. This is basic needs. I really struggle to think this is a good way to go, even though I didn't know we were that far below almost everyone else.
And this requires a vote.
Majority vote. Yeah.
Generates quite a bit at going to about the median.
Yeah, and again, I think if you recommend some and not others, then you also should make a recommendation about how to make up the difference.
What's our total so far? What have we got?
Which money have we made?
How much money have we made in this exercise?
I can then move ahead and see all of it.
So we got 3.5.
Again, we'll just quickly note, in a lot of these concepts have already been discussed by the committee, but when you're looking at these revenue options, obviously, will the measure raise sufficient revenue and sustainable? Will it fluctuate significantly with the economy? How does it impact our competitiveness? How does it factor into equity in terms of who bears the tax burden? What's the likelihood of a legal challenge? And then, you know, historically, have your voters been supportive? So here's sort of the high level business license. Again, this is the estimated increase over what we've already budgeted business license, just under the 6.8, somewhat volatile, again, based on how well businesses are performing. For staff, of course, you know, complexity and administration is key too. This one's fairly straightforward. The, you know, business owners, report on the HDL portal, and again, if we move forward and those 56 or so categories coming down to 5, it'd probably be a lot easier business owners and staff. Parcel tax, again, the one that requires the 2/3, we've put in, for argument's sake, $5 million as, again, a max. A little more resilient to the economy. Again, it's based on a flat amount. Fairly easy to administer, gets put on the county tax roll, but as NDS noted, sometimes the tax roll is a little inaccurate. Sales tax or transaction use tax, it does require forfeits approval by council to put it on the ballot, but it would be voter approval. We have it here at the 2.25. It's obviously more sensitive to the economy. Very easy to administer. The state collects it and remits it to us, and you can see there your TOT at the 2% and your UUT factoring in the 2% and the video. So all of those get you to about 17.
We pause for a second.
Yes.
I think Navarro
make a motion to extend the meeting by a few minutes, which I don't think we need all of, but I don't want to have to do it.
Seconds.
Sure.
Do we need roll call, voice vote?
Was that weird? Was that a second? You're sure? Yeah. I read it as a second. You seconded the motion.
Fine.
Fine. We have 65 seconds.
Okay. Chair Feldman?
Aye.
Okay. Vice Chair Tell?
Yes.
Member Cuthbert?
Yes.
Member Oaks?
I agree with myself.
I'll come back to the slide, but just again, to wrap up next steps, budget and governance in 2 days. City Council, November, December, to consider this feedback. If Council should decide to move forward with one or more revenue measures, we engage in community outreach and serving. Likely in the early part of the year of 2026, work with council, legal council, as well as our elected city council on ballot measures and corresponding ordinances to get everything to the county in early August. Would be their deadline to put a ballot, the election for November 3rd, 2026. That's it.
Will the taxes be effective?
Brian and I were actually just talking about that. It would depend on several factors. Business license would be probably something council would consider in the ballot language. Maybe it would start fresh in January.
Of 2027,
correct, because our business license are now due at the end of the year. Parcel would probably likely January 27. Sales tax, actually, the state wouldn't remit tax rate until April, so there would be a lag there. TOT probably January, and then utility but probably January as well. But again, those dates could be stipulated. Probably business license would be the only one to maybe give some more consideration as to the timing, phasing that in for the businesses.
Yeah, all these categories, people might move categories. Could be a
okay. Can you go back to you are on that slide. Thank you. Okay, so what I heard from our feedback along the way is business license, yes, and we stopped at, like, using this one. We stopped at variable, yes, but we were going to come back to, is it the 3.3 or the 6.8? So let's assume we go with the higher option, which leaves retail where it is today, but everyone else goes up. So that gets to 6.8. If you do the parcel at up to 4.5 or 5 million, let's say it's 5 and you make it up with business, no more than $100 for residential. Then you add, I think, I'll skip the use tax, sales tax, occupancy tax.
Todd,
I think, feeling good about maybe.
A mill or 900, they put 900 as a conservative thing.
And then a utility user. So if we ignore the sales and utility user, mm-hmm. we would get to
12.
I count 12.
12.7.
Does that cover the projected deficit?
It's close, right? 13.
12.9 or something. It's close. Basically, gets it. Yeah.
The rest made up for, with some of this being a little conservative, hopes and dreams, maybe expense cuts.
Well, maybe the construction revenue comes back.
Construction. Yeah. We get our pilot in Sutter, and it's 20 right. million a year.
Yeah, I love that.
That's going to happen.
Yeah.
Well, of course, Sutter is tax exempt. So
Sutter goes profit, and then,
So they come off the rolls. But you may get a hotel from Sutter.
That's more occupancy. Yeah.
The problem I have with changing anything that has to do with utilities is that people are so so negative about that. And I think if we're trying to pass these other taxes, just leave that alone.
And the other, either those will tut and the make them like on the list.
I think the thing with the you're trying to pass something, and if we're like, we're going to do these 5 things. You're like, whoa, 5 things. Right? If you're trying to do 3 things, and this isn't going to affect me when I go to the grocery store or when I get my utility bill, that's a really different feeling. And it just seems way more palatable. Okay, we still have a problem. We have a substantially less problem.
Huge.
And we still are leaving ourselves open to other options moving forward if we feel like we need them, if it doesn't work, if it's not enough. I like that it leaves us a little flexibility moving forward in our options.
Yeah, just to clarify, in the parcel, you're talking about 4.5 because you wanted to keep it 100 versus 5, right?
Right. Well, I think I think our wording was that you could go a little higher on the commercial.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. Keep residential at 100. Do whatever you want to commercial. $50 per 100. I don't know.
But so in your experience, Brian, Navarre was making the argument that we would maybe just put 3 on there because it's not asking too much. But well, if you put 5 on there, maybe you get 4.
Well, I think the first question for this group, and again, you're kind of landing where you were earlier in the year, so I think that's pretty consistent. But I think in terms of how many you put on the ballot and when, that's really a discussion for the council and ultimately for polling.
Right.
There are some firms, strategists that say 1 at a time. I've worked with cities that have done 2 or 3. And of course, is Sharon will know, in the last election, Berkeley had 11. So,
and like most passed, right?
Most passed, 7 passed. Yeah.
Wow.
So it could be done. I'm not sure that I recommend that.
It would have to each be voted on individually.
Well, that's correct.
Be going as a package.
That's correct. That's correct.
Yeah.
I think know from my perspective in serving on this committee, I want things that are going to work so that the general fund has a better chance of balancing, that we're just not sailing into negative territory, exploding negative territory.
So I think we're coalescing around a consensus on this, but do you have another question?
Brian, which do you think of these would pass?
I want to save that till we do polling later. Think about what do we want? Ignore polling, what do we want? But if you want to ask, we can. Wait, Brian.
Go ahead.
I told her not to ask.
All right.
Only I'm trying to keep us on time or early.
Never mind.
But do you want to know, does that matter right now for what you're going to recommend that we study in polling?
The reason is I want to see the total number.
But dollar amount?
I want to see the total dollar amount that we can, that has the best chance of passing.
I don't think we know until polling.
That's unfortunate.
I think I would agree, except that I think that we're probably our opinion probably are the ones that are most likely to succeed too.
I mean, if the 4 of us are generally in agreement, we're 4. Well, I think 3 voters maybe.
Not that we're voters.
I never vote.
Yeah. No. Okay. Questions, comments, anything before a motion? Someone remember well enough to make the motion?
Is the motion for everything then? We took one for the parcel?
No, we haven't done any yet.
Or the business license?
I think they were informal.
They were informal.
Got an idea where you guys were going.
Mm-hmm.
Do you let chairs make motions?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you want me to try?
Yeah.
All right.
I don't remember, but so you say it. And I'll
Sam will ace it.
Yeah.
Okay, so business license, I guess we didn't formally say it. We are recommending variable option 2 for the full amount.
Mm-hmm.
Do we have to say no cap?
Oh, and no cap. So as recommended option 2 variable.
Which was both option, both variable and no cap.
And no cap.
The lower retail.
And then we're going parcel option 3, which is a flat rate for residential per square foot for commercial residential. We think 100 should be our recommendation for the cap to study and poll. Up to 100 is our recommendation. The business, you could make up the difference and go even above the 4th option.
With an option for if you're a part of CARE or another program.
Oh, yes, with the income discount.
Thank you.
I would have forgotten. Okay, I don't think we had anything else on that one. And then we are recommending the hotel, the transient occupancy tax, TOT, at the 14%.
Up to 14%.
With a request to please ask the hotel managers to, do they think this matters?
Yes, they may say it doesn't.
And then we are not recommending, we're explicitly recommending against pursuing Toot and Oot.
Yes. And if
I think, yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Not silent on it, we're recommending against. Don't pursue.
And I think it's explicitly mentioning our opposition because of the daily impact of people's lives.
Yeah.
And wanting to leave options open for the future. Saying explicitly that that's why.
Yes.
Resident voters or residents voters?
Yeah, and like,
yeah, it's right.
Too aggressive.
For residents, I want to emphasize.
Especially lower income folks or even medium income folks that, again, the tax burden's high in California. Why, if we can avoid adding to it by attacking other things.
And I think also in the past, we've just voted to increase the sales tax over and over. So, or the T-train, what is it, the use tax. So that's why we're already at the top. But like I voted on it multiple times.
A while.
Yeah. Okay, is that the motion?
That was my total motion.
I will second.
Okay. Did you get it well enough?
Yeah, is it okay if for the parcel tax, I just say income-based exemption? Or do you want me to specify the exemption?
I don't think we need the PG&E, whatever.
We could say income-based exemption, such as via care.
Yeah, yeah.
Such as via care.
I always worry about tying us to other agencies, because who knows what the heck they do in the future. They might say, no verification ever.
You can say such as, like, we're not trying to create a new system.
Yeah. I also don't want staff to...
the trade-off is if you say income-based, but it's not like PG&E, then staff's going to have to ask for proof. Or if you tie it to that, then there's an already just big one.
It's great.
Yes, such as cares.
Yeah, for sure.
It's good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Is there a first, second? I think roll call if you're ready.
Yes. Jeff Feldman?
Aye.
Chair Feldman?
Aye.
Vice Chair Patel?
Aye.
Member Clifford?
Aye.
Member?
Aye. Did we first and second for that?
Yeah, first.
We
sort of all made the motion together, but I will be on record for it. I'm responsible. Yeah.
Chair and Vice Chair.
Okay. Item 6, future agenda items are listed there. Any questions, comments, things to add, team? I think they look good.
So these are all regular,
wait a second.
Regular items, good, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think the sewer fee is one I'm interested in. Just we're over 10 years due on that.
Oh, you asked for that.
Yeah. Trying to keep Sharon busy. Keep her interested.
When it says sewer fees and update plans.
Update to the cost of service, I think is what I meant. But.
You don't want like a sewer system, Matt.
No. I would love one. But...
An underground tour.
Wastewater tour. I'll put in a plug again. That'd be really great.
It would be a revenue opportunity. Yeah.
You can go see the torn up interceptor they're working on.
They do that in 6 Seattle.
There you go.
Are you all having issues?
Well,
okay. All right. Announcements, member comments, anything else? We have a meeting on the calendar for October 9th. I bring my correct phone, but I will.
October 9th?
Is that a normal? That's one of our normal.
Yeah, that is your normal. Yeah, right. The regular meeting. Regular
are there, you'll have agenda items?
Likely maybe. We'll be focusing on investment policy and the pension trust.
So you're not likely to cancel it and then schedule a special meeting? Which is what we did like almost every month for like a year or two.
Prefer not to, but again,
it's the availability of it.
No.
I have a conflict on that day by half an hour, and I'm wondering if we could meet instead of at 1:30, if we could meet earlier.
This was since 2. Earlier is harder for me.
It's harder for you?
Yeah.
All right.
Is that okay?
I don't know.
Well, would you mind sending to us and just asking, and we'll then confirm.
Right.
Any other comments?
If I may
please make
one quick comment. First of all, thank you for the really great discussion.
look forward to continuing to work with you. And Harvest Fair is October 4th.
Saturday, October 4th.
We would, based on recommendations presented to City Council, would really like our members that are serving on our current committees to help get the word out to your fellow residents about considering being part of any of the city committees. So if you are able to do that, April 4th, and our city clerk has more information, as well as our community services director, where you can let me know and I can put you all in contact. But
for
tabling opportunities to really try to do community outreach to try to get more Emeryville residents involved in participating in the democratic process here.
Do you have a sense of if April is getting enough folks?
She has a few people have reached out. Good. So yeah, right. we could use more.
I think the idea is to have a variety of people.
Yeah.
So to have different people representing different committees, people can, someone from the parks, but he's not going to speak to parks, right? So the more the merrier.
And I was going to ask, I don't think this changed, but I don't, maybe didn't follow. The vacancy we have is business, right? Or is that now a resident or a business?
Or
something else.
I don't think it changed.
I don't think it changed yet. There is a discussion to change it for the next time. Yes.
Okay. Oh, okay. Well, we're done. Do we need a motion to adjourn?
No.
We're done. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You just made it.
Thank you.
I felt
like
you feel important now.
Thank you for
keeping this on track.
I was joking.
Is it too much?
It's a.